There have been so many great questions. Maybe I'll start by asking if there's any more questions. No? Okay. Now, before lunch, there was kind of a question around what was the four requirements for being a sotapanna, which were a little bit different. You know, usually the fourth thing required is sila, good, you know, excellent sila. But occasionally it's something else. It's if you're a very generous donor, a super generous donor, that can be the fourth thing in a couple of cases, a couple of suttas. And I've met many Sri Lankan monks who really, they jumped on those couple of suttas and they made really a big deal of it, encouraging dana, because you can be a sotapanna from it according to these suttas. So I found where they are. 55.39, Kali Godha. Okay. So the Buddha is talking to this lay woman named Godha, G-O-D-H-A. Okay, Godha, a noble woman disciple who possesses four things is a stream enterer, no longer bound to the nether world, fixed in destiny, with enlightenment as her destination. What for? Here, Godha, a noble woman disciple, possesses confirmed confidence in the Buddha, thus. And then it's all the ititi so bhagava things, okay? Confidence in the Buddha, confidence in the Dhamma, confidence in the Sangha. Okay, now for the fourth thing, she dwells at home with a mind devoid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighted in giving and sharing. A noble woman disciple, Godha, who possesses these four things, is a stream enterer, no longer bound to the nether world, fixed in destiny with enlightenment as her destination. Okay, so, 55.39. I think I made a mistake on 55.37. Anyway, there is one more sutta, which I didn't track down before this time right now, but there's one more sutta where it also says the same thing. Anyway, I found one of them. Why would I point this out? I feel that to be a sotapanna, one only needs to live up to one of these lists of all the things it takes to be a sotapanna, not every list of what it takes to be a sotapanna. Whoever would claim you must satisfy every list of what it takes to be a sotapanna, or you're not a sotapanna, then I would say, okay, well, then come look at this 55.39 here, this Samyutta Nikaya. 55.39, and it, you know, about the profuse giver, you know, super generous giver. And so if any person, any monk, any nun, any person isn't this super generous giver, are they not a sotapanna then? Like, do we disqualify anybody? You know, it makes it too hard, I say, if you have to satisfy every list. Okay, so setting aside the whole Sotapanna thing. Okay, coming back to the theme of the five indriyas. That's the theme of this retreat, the five faculties. Now, here's an interesting sutta that uses this term deathless a lot. The Pali word is amata, A-M-A-T-A, deathless. Okay, I'm going to read this out. This is Samyutta Nikaya 48.44. The title is The Eastern Gatehouse. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Sawati in the Eastern Gatehouse. There, the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Sariputta thus, Sariputta, do you have faith that the faculty of faith, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal, and likewise all the other faculties too? He basically repeats that for each of the five faculties. Okay, do you believe that the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal? And then Venerable Sariputta says, Venerable Sir, I do not go by faith in the Blessed One about this, that the faculty of faith, and then he repeats this back for each of the five faculties, and the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal. Those by whom this has not been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted with wisdom, they would have to go by faith in others about this, that the faculty of faith, and then he repeats it all back again, the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its goal. But those by whom this has been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted with wisdom, they would be without perplexity or doubt about this, that the faculty of faith, and he repeats it all back again, the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal. I am one, Venerable Sir, by whom this has been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted with wisdom. I am without perplexity or doubt about this. He repeats it back, that the faculty of faith, so on and so forth, and the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal. Good, good, Sariputta, said the Buddha. Those by whom this has not been known. And then, the Buddha kind of agrees and repeats back, yes, they would have to go by faith when they, you know. But those by whom this has been known, they would be without perplexity or doubt about this. Yeah, so, what I think is interesting in this sutta is this term deathless is used a lot, many times. It's one of the more rare terms that talks about things like nibbana, things like samadhi, and I would dare to say this would include the Brahmaviharas too, okay, the deathless. Sometimes called the deathless element, the deathless element. I personally kind of like using this term to just sort of refer to, you know, the Brahmaviharas and up, you know, everything starting from Brahmaviharas and up, you know, includes the jhanas, it's basically all that good stuff which comes in our meditation when the peace kind of takes off, you know, and it's not just boring, flat, uneventful meditation, but rather we sort of break through to something supra mundane, something out of the ordinary, something heavenly, something amazing. It goes beyond normal happiness, normal human happiness. I would call that, everything starting there and up. That's all the deathless. And what's nice about this term is that it doesn't... It's kind of a general purpose term. Some people might not like that. They don't like inexact terminology. They want exact terminology. No. What exact jhana did you attain to? What exact Brahman you are did you attain to? Are you an arahant or not? Are you a sotapanna or not? I want to classify this and categorize this. Well, that's cool, everyone profits from having a sincerity towards practice. But I say, watch out, because if that is taken too far, if we get too serious, it can lead to a mentality of measurement. I call it a mentality of measurement, where we're very eager to measure things when we don't need to. One of the qualities of the arahant, interestingly, is they are free of this mentality of measurement. They stop being so competitive. There's this stock phrase you see in the suttas which goes, not greater than, not lesser than, and not equal to either. Okay, so the arahants quit being so intent on comparison. Who's greater than who? Who's lesser than who? Who's equal to who? Let's compare this. Let's figure out who's the best and who's the loser here. Yeah, so I think, yes, we have to have a sincerity of practice such that we're not like lazy or make no effort. But there is such a thing as getting too serious and too competitive where, we fall into this thinking, which is like we were intent on measuring greater than, lesser than, or equal to. And the arahants, they have cooled off on that. They stop doing all this comparison, greater than, lesser than, or equal to. Anyway, so this term deathless is kind of convenient, I say. When we just want to refer to practice which has it bears fruit, there's some Brahmavihara there, or a jhana there, or maybe even joy or serenity. There's many words to describe these things. You'd be surprised that when you ordain as a monk, you would think the monks would chat with each other a lot, what jhana can you attain to? That pretty much never happens, actually. And here's why. As soon as you might make some kind of a claim, you know, let's say some monk's like, well, I attained to like the fourth jhana, you know, 2 days ago. If some monk says that, all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh, this monk made a claim, everyone. This monk says he's attained to this thing. Oh, well, he's got to stand up to some serious scrutiny now. Okay. Get out every sutta where it says something about the fourth jhana. Okay. Did this happen? Did that happen? How would you describe it? Tell me every little thing about it. And you better list everything which we can find in the suttas. Oh, what's that? You didn't mention this little thing? Couldn't be the fourth jhana then. There's a sutta way over in this corner which mentions this thing, and you didn't say you had that. So, I think that was just metta or something, you know. That must have just been some metta. You just made a mistake. You thought that was the fourth jhana. Okay, so once you make a claim of any sort, now you got to defend that claim. And it's far safer to just never make any claims. Okay? Now, some monks are kind-hearted who are happy that you attained something, but a lot of monks are kind of these competitive types, and they are eager to pull you down, that you didn't attain that, actually. I wish that wasn't so. Anyway, so just words like the deathless, you know, you just kind of, it gives you a chance to be a little vague about what happened. Yeah. When one has these experiences, it's very hard to describe them. And even when you can describe it, you know, you try to describe it, the other person doesn't necessarily share your enthusiasm, and they, you know, they're like, that doesn't sound all that amazing to me, though. You know, to you, I guess it was amazing, but that amazingness just isn't coming through. You know, I just don't see the amazingness. Like, you aren't glowing with happiness and excitement and, you know, peace, and I'm not all that impressed, actually, you know, despite your story about it. I'm just not feeling it, you know. So there's this weird effect where, like, try as you might to share your enthusiasm, it doesn't really come across usually. My first kind of teacher monk had this phrase that I quite like. He would say, look, you just had to be there. You had to be there. Like, he'd stop short of explaining, trying to explain this sort of thing. But he would say, you had to be there. Meaning like, well, now that it's over, you know, you don't describe it after the fact. It, you know, it was what it was when it happened. You had to be there. Yeah, so there is this weird thing about trying to share these practices. It tends to not come across to the other side, to the person you're talking to. I have a funny little story to share as well. I stayed in a monastery in Thailand called Wat Swan Mok, and none of those monastics would really talk about their practice with each other. And when it was asked why they don't talk about it, this one nun said, the only reason we all get along is we don't talk about our practice. Like, it was actually a thing to not talk about your practice, because it's just going to create confusion. It's just going to create, you know, hard feelings. Yeah, it's kind of weird that way. So yeah, usually when monks speak of all these things, they speak very impersonally. They don't want to talk too much about their own practice. All these talks about jhanas and brahmiharas and all this stuff, it's virtually never the case. Some monk is like, I attained this jhana and this is what it felt like. I attained that jhana and that's what it felt like. It's virtually never the case. They speak about it impersonally. Well, the suttas say this, the suttas say that. Yeah, so anyway, everybody here who, you know, really practices sincerely and attains to these deeper states, that's more so a personal thing for you, you know? You can share it with somebody you trust, but please develop that trust. Make sure you trust the person first. They should be a close friend before you share it. And you should have a sense, this is the sort of person who would delight in my achievements, you know? If I were to tell this person of any achievement, they would be the sort to be really supportive and, you know, happy about it. Don't assume. Not everybody is the kind of person who will delight in your achievements. That's just kind of human nature, I guess. So it's best to keep these sorts of things private by default. I guess that's the lesson here. Now the Buddha, Venerable Sariputta, you know, they have this very deep trust thing happening. They, you know, they can openly talk about it, and we see it in the suttas being talked about a lot, but. I don't think I've ever seen it once in my monk life where real life monks talked like that. You know, one monk says to the other, oh yes, I delighted in this and that jhana, and the other one's like, oh, right on, yes you do, I love it, and oh no, never. That's just in the suttas. Anyway, it needs to be the suttas. We need that inspiration. But what human nature is like is sometimes another thing. Yeah. I don't mean to be pessimistic here, but it is... I've kind of learned this stuff the hard way over time.